Hello and welcome to a special episode of Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types. It is the 28th of October, late at night, and we just watched the entirety of the GOP debate. Not the kiddie table one, we skipped that one. Just the big kids. It's Travis, I'm here with Rachel.
Hi.
And Dana Hutchison.
Hello.
And we had a little bit to drink, not excessive amounts.
Not as much as last time.
Not as much as last time, which is odd, because we probably should have had more to drink. and overall, a little bit more of a depressing experience than a fun one.
I agree.
Sitting through this one, but it's our duty to disseminate this information for you, especially our close friends who don't follow this stuff as much as we do.
And don't want to subject yourselves to that two-hour debacle.
Yeah, we're here to do a great public service and condense it for you with our typical humor and snark. So, guys, let's quickly just overall impressions real quick of what we just saw.
Yeah, I have a couple themes that I wrote down that I thought were interesting. One was income inequality, which they talked about a lot. I think maybe Bernie's getting to them a little bit, and then Hillary jumping on board. So they talked about it, and we'll get into what they talked about. Also, let's see.
Yeah, I would say, just quickly, interestingly on that one, I thought, you know, normally in the primary debate cycle, we have a lot of people within a party pushing each other to one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It seems on this one, seems like the other primary is pushing one another to a particular position, income inequality being a very big one that was very clear tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
And then fighting with the moderators. Like, shit was way more heated between the moderators and the candidates than it was between the candidates themselves.
Which, and I'll get to that. And that's going to play great with the GOP base. The general public, yes. Not so much. But yeah, it was sort of the way it started out. I thought it was going to be great because the moderators were baiting them into slinging shit at each other.
Yep.
But then the candidates got smart after the first break. I don't know if they talked amongst themselves or what, but they all kind of regrouped and said, let's not do this. Let's turn it all on them and throw them. Besides, this is an NBC station, so let's throw them into the media. Let's chastise them for asking us these tough questions and say they're gotcha questions, and that, you know, it's bigger liberal media bias. And that was smart. That was a shrewd political maneuver.
And it worked with the audience. There were many like applause breaks and laugh lines and lots of good hitbacks.
And I could hear my dad down in Boca Raton fist pumping.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, whenever Ted Cruz said, "See, you liberal media folks ask these tough questions and you throw softballs at," I could just hear him grunting and
That's what I've been saying.
And my take on it was not that they got together after the break, but that it was kind of premeditated all along.
Probably. But they almost lost it before that first break when they really started going after each other and interrupting each other. And
well, they never really stopped being the monkeys who throw shit at each other the entire debate. But what they all definitely did, once the momentum was rolling on the questions being asked, is they all decided to start flinging the poo a little bit towards the podium where the
moderators
were.
Media generally.
And Hillary Clinton, yeah.
And Hillary Clinton. Which, that was my other media. Theme.
Which is smart. Which is smart to a point.
All right, so the opening question I thought was smart because this was supposed to be, your money, your vote was the theme.
Mm-hmm.
CNBC, which is a financial news
network
off of NBC.
Wall Street.
Yeah, Wall Street, exactly.
I can't
and
stand
so it. But me either. So the guy was like, if you're at an interview, because you're basically interviewing for president right now, I'm going to ask you your greatest weakness. And don't tell me I'm too punctual or I'm too polite. Tell me your actual weakness. And the first person they went to was John Kasich. And he just basically went, fuck you, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to talk about my record in Ohio.
Yeah, fuck your question, yeah.
Yeah, not going to do it.
And most of the others did too. In fact, the only one that even sort of tried to go that way was Bush and maybe Rubio a little bit.
Yeah. Bush answered it by saying that he was impatient and that he didn't have a capacity to feign anger, and so this is the greatest country in the world?
Now, okay, let me say something in their defense.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that question.
Oh, everyone does.
I've been to about 5,000 job interviews in the last 5 years because I've been moving throughout different states and changing careers and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do you want me to say? What's my biggest weakness? Well, I tend to show up at work drunk and jerk off to gay porn and during my lunch break.
Right. Like,
what do you want me to say?
I'm always late and I'm unfocused and I hate my job and I don't care.
I talk shit about my coworkers.
Right. I mean, what is the answer that you're looking for here?
I'm too dedicated.
Yeah, which is no. Okay. Too driving. So Trump said he was too trusting of people.
Which is weird.
He trusts everyone.
And when somebody hurts his feelings because they've broken his trust because he trusted them, but they turned around and disappointed him, he's not forgiving of that.
Right. He never forgives.
Which is a weird thing for a presidential candidate to say. It's not very presidential.
No.
Well, no, I think what are the implications of that from international affairs perspective?
Right, foreign policy.
When we start talking about foreign policy, like, you're trusted Assad too much, and then when he let you down, you just bombed him all to hell?
Yeah, it's not a very mature statesmanly thing to say, but that it's in keeping with Trump's character to speak off the cuff and not sound like a serious politician.
Sure.
Did anyone understand what Carson's answer was? Because he basically said, my greatest weakness...
I didn't understand a thing he said all night.
Okay, thank you. But my greatest weakness is I didn't think I should have the job of president until other people said I should, and now I think I should, is what I got. Did you guys understand what he said? Because it was
trying to say is that his greatest weakness as a president would be that he never felt himself to be a presidential figure until he was elevated to presidentialness.
No one
by
else does either.
Large community support because everyone wants him to be president.
He literally said, like, hundreds of thousands of people told me to run or something. Like,
okay.
That's exactly
fuck?
What he said, yeah.
Let me give a quick primer on Carson. I don't get it. I've said this over and over. I don't really understand the appeal. He's sleepy-eyed. He's not making sense. He doesn't talk in any specifics that really make any sense. And I think what it is the really angry, rabid right-wing conservatives – he is getting across the same, you know, horrible homophobic, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant message, but he says it in like the sleepy, sedated neighbor voice.
Sleepy guy voice? That's
so
like,
it's not
by Mr. Rogers. Don't worry about
it. Right. It's Mr. Rogers, you know, talking about horrible things about, you know, homosexuals and
women
and everything else. So that's less threatening. So they like that. But I don't get the Carson thing. I see, my reaction is he didn't help himself tonight, but the way it's gone, maybe he did. I have no idea.
I mean, to be totally fair, 4 years ago, I didn't understand Romney either, and he didn't have this sleepy a voice, but he still had kind of this
No, there's
real,
no comparison.
He had the, I guess not a weird, sleepy, obviously medicated person thing. He had the...
he had sort of the school dean...
The Robotronic school dean...
shirt thing.
I'm going to treat you
but,
like
but
children because you're
for,
acting like children and
but
that's
that
what
works
you are
because
you're children.
But that usually works in presidential politics. This Carson right. thing, I don't fucking get it.
I don't get it either. Okay, next, Fiorina. She... I kind of loved her for this, just for a second. She said, apparently other people think my greatest weakness is I don't smile enough.
Nice.
Which was kind of a jab
like
at
a
feminist
ding.
Politics and mm-hmm. you know, the sort of things that get thrown at women. And then she did a huge smile for way too long, which was uncomfortable, but I got her point and I thought it was kind of cute.
Yeah.
And then Trump chimed in, because of course he did.
Yes.
And he said, well, you're making up for it now.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then she sounded a little bit like a Democrat for a second, and she's talking about how big government, well, big corporations and big lobby groups and Citizens United makes small people not be able to have a voice in government. And I'm like,
yeah.
What party are you running for right now? I don't
no,
understand.
Which
this
is fine.
This was a theme all night, actually.
Yeah. But then she undid that all by, you know, doing the same old
yeah.
get rid of all regulations,
so
and,
regulations
let, and let
the
big corporations run wild.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is their answer to everything.
A giant amount of circle talk coming from her the entire evening.
Well, from all of them. From all of them.
Yeah, her in particular was almost inflammatory to a certain point because, you know, she tried to use all the same talking points that are getting a lot of, I guess, Beltway credit from the Democratic side, but then coming back with responses or solutions or proposed solutions that have absolutely nothing to do with what she was saying was what the problem was.
Well, they all did. They've all sort of figured out we need to try to work this populist angle, And so they've taken all the Democratic buzzwords, income inequality, the 1%, this and that. Of course, their solution to it is to give them a lot more money and fuck everybody else, and somehow that'll help everybody.
Yeah, trickle down.
And hope that people are stupid enough to be fooled by that. But it was kind of interesting because they went with that, yet the rest of the debate was very obviously a red meat to the base discussion.
Correct. Yeah, and interestingly, I thought CNBC, their whole thing was this is going to be an economics debate, and somehow they managed to bring in some social issues.
Couple things,
which we'll talk about later. But the next really funny one that I loved from the opening statements was Ted Cruz. And he basically said, I might not be a guy you want to have a beer with, but as your president, I'll be your DD. I'll be your sober driver. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that means.
He didn't quite say, I'll be your sober driver. He did say...
He said, literally, I'll be your sober driver.
He literally said, I'll be the person who's going to drive the country home.
Right.
He didn't say sober, but he did say that I'm not going to have the beer with you, so we can imply. And it was a really weird thing to say.
What does that mean?
No, it doesn't mean anything.
What does it mean?
It's very silly and stupid. And
I'm not going to drink on the job, or I'm going to... What does it mean?
I think what he was trying to say
in a larger sense was, Obama's a guy you want to have a beer with, and look, we have this bad hangover, and now I'm the sober one to clean it up, I think is where he was going. But it came off a little awkward.
If you're going to do the alcohol metaphor, I say you just go full retard on that one. I don't know why you stop.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So then Chris Christie comes in, and he's the only one that attacked Democrats. Specifically, he was the first person to bring up Hillary Clinton. And he said, basically, don't worry about my record. What you should worry about is, if I'm on a stage with Hillary Clinton, I will prevent her from getting to the White House. To which Dana said...
Well, he said, I wouldn't let her anywhere within 10 miles of the White House.
Or she won't get within 10 miles of the White House.
Or she won't get within 10 miles of the White House. And I said, yeah, that's because you're going to shut down the bridges.
Hey-o!
So, Christie Bash. Okay, and then the last one that I have any notes about was Rand Paul. And he didn't talk about anything about himself. He said, I hate the budget deal. I'm going to do a fake filibuster, talking about the current congressional budget deal that we're going to maybe do with Paul Ryan and all that, which we'll get to next podcast. But he basically, that's what he was wanting to talk about. So
I'd actually like to talk about this very briefly. Let's make it quick. But,
super quick,
because you guys are going to do a whole podcast about it, especially after the vote goes down tomorrow on whether Paul Ryan's actually going to be the speaker and the actual vote on whether or not the budget deal goes through. But considering that Paul Ryan said he would expect only accept the speakership if he could get the budget deal to go through, and John Boehner's basically making this his swan song to make sure that
he can get the fuck out of Dodge.
Can get the fuck out of there and retire in some sort of dignity. It seems really stupid to, on a public stage, say, I'm going to personally stop this when you don't even have the votes to even allow a filibuster.
No, it makes perfect sense. It's an 11-hour free campaign commercial.
Exactly.
Well, I agree with that, but he's making a promise that without the public forgetting what it was, because in 10 hours...
But Rand Paul doesn't care. He's all in. He's in danger of losing his Senate seat at this point. He is all in.
Right, he's not a member of the House, so I guess
on this presidential run, and this is his last gasp, is this bullshit fake filibuster, because he can't actually filibuster because of Senate rules, and I'm not going to get into all that now. But he's gonna grandstand for 11 hours either tomorrow or the next day or something.
Yeah.
And it's not going to actually stop the vote, but it's going to be, you know, some headlines for Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Sure. I just think the headlines are going to be Rand Paul promised something that was not physically possible.
No, yeah, no one cares. They love it.
I keep trying to bring reason back into this.
No, yeah,
sorry.
You watched the wrong debate for that, buddy.
All right, so first topic that they actually brought up was taxes. And this is when we first got to see the moderators kind of bare their teeth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that the old guy, and I don't know his name because I don't care, asked Trump was...
John Harwood?
Was basically... And this is a quote. Is this a comic book version of a presidential campaign? Because he was asking Trump, like, you keep making all these ridiculous statements and you keep saying all these things
that
don't seem to be possible.
Yeah.
And asking about making Mexico pay for the wall and all that stuff. And Trump came back and in true Trump fashion said, that was not a very nice way to ask that question. But he's trying to not Megyn Kelly this guy. So he's like,
right,
that wasn't very nice. But if you look at the facts, blah, blah, blah. Kenna denied half of it and then talked about some nonsense about Mexico is going to pay for the wall because the trade deficit or something. Does anyone know the fuck he's talking about?
Yeah. Well, I got to give kudos to a lot of them tonight, at least for being well prepared. And I thought that Trump in particular did a really good job of doing everything that has made his campaign successful so far. It was more of the same. I don't think it was any more or less focused, maybe a little tighter and more focused.
Definitely.
But now all the momentum's with Carson, so I don't know what's going to happen. But in terms of like Trump melting down and losing it tonight, he didn't. He did the same old Trump shit that's been working. So,
but he had a little more to say and a little, it was definitely tighter. Definitely some debate prep.
He had some discipline.
Yeah, and I would say it occurred to me a couple times throughout the debate when people were attacking the moderators for being unfair or asking mm-hmm. questions in a biased manner. This was brought up. I counted at least two, but I wouldn't put it past me if there was another one that slipped me. So two, maybe three times, somebody instead said, back to the moderators, you accused Trump of being a comic book villain.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, is this a comic book campaign? And I don't actually really know what that question means, but they turned it around real quick.
Yeah.
They've clearly been doing some debate prep to turn it around and say, like, when you're calling my friend up here on the dais with me a comic book villain, blah, blah, blah. It definitely makes me think that they've been really preparing for a lot of things.
Well, it was smart. It was smart to have a unified front after Hillary had a very good week and a strong debate. And it's like, if we get out here and fling shit at each other for 2 hours, oh boy, are we all in trouble. We better get on the ball. And, CNBC set him up nicely for it with some tough questions, with some, with some pointed questions like the are you a comic book character thing. And that gave them the opening.
Well, and exactly to the next point, because Trump and Carson are in the front running, right? That's the two big guys. And mm-hmm. Carson is just in a couple polls, just come ahead of Trump.
At least in Iowa. And
Leading. I don't want to say coming on Trump. But so the lady moderator, who I actually really liked, Becky something, she asked Carson a really pointed question right after Trump about his tax plan and about the 10% flat tax, which he based on church tithing, I guess, which is gross. And she just said, like, look, we've run the numbers. It doesn't work. It causes, like, a $2.4 trillion deficit. And how do you explain that? And he looked like somebody, a ghost came in front of him. He was like, no, that's not true. And she's like, it is true.
Well, that was
like
a recurring theme tonight.
Every
single moderator was like, your tax plan sucks and it makes no sense and it's going to increase the deficit. And they're like, well, no, your number's wrong.
Yeah.
And he's like, taxes don't matter. It's about stimulating the economy and making it bigger. And that will make taxes not fund the government. And everything he says to me is incomprehensible.
Well, that was,
I don't understand.
That went for everybody. What they said in terms of trying to explain how their tax plan and their economic works, it was just a verbal circle jerk of not making any sense. But people don't necessarily pay attention. They listen for the buzzwords and what they want to hear. And so in that sense, I don't know if it was effective past the base of the party tonight, but I think some candidates. We'll get into who it helped and who it didn't. But go on, Rachel.
Just going to say, I agree. This was a theme for the night. Mm-hmm. And normally when we do this, we usually just sit down with a couple of glasses of booze and watch this and just try to cope with it until
just
make it through. Tonight was one of the first times that I ever felt the actual need to fact check some people because.
Well, I sure hope there's fact checking because there was so much bullshit being.
Normally. Like the first debate with the Republicans, Carly Fiorina, everything she said, I was like, well, I know for a fact that's not true, and already cite my source.
Mm-hmm.
This is some things where they threw around numbers to the point where it was like, well, I couldn't possibly know that unless I do some fact-checking,
mm-hmm.
and did some fact-checking during the debate, and almost every single statement they said
was bullshit. Yeah.
Total fucking bullshit.
Of course it was.
Dana was our fact-checker tonight, and
virtually nothing
true was said.
And we'll see how much fact checking is done because we're just talking about the optics, and the optics showed that pretty much every candidate was much better prepared and disciplined than they were in the first debate.
So much more prepared and polished and had talking points. And I think especially stuff about the economy, because that's what the basis of the debate was about.
Mm-hmm.
When they pivoted, which we'll get to later, they struggled a little bit. But I want to get onto just one more of the tax issues, which was John Kasich. And they asked him about his tax plan, and of course, his theme all night was, well, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Ohio. And to Martin O'Malley's credit, the last time, like, I think he was trying to say, you guys keep saying what you're going to do. I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it was effective, but...
Was it effective for O'Malley?
No, it wasn't. And to Travis's point, when we were watching the debate, he said, you know, he was talking about, oh, I balanced the federal budget, and I was a part of all of that, and blah, blah, blah. And Travis said... Under Bill Clinton.
That's right.
So I don't know how that helps him in the Republican primary.
Well, it doesn't, because this whole opening salvo was like, these people are all nuts.
Yeah.
And he did. He said, like, he made fun of Trump and Carson.
And, getting rid of Social Security and Medicare is crazy. Trying to deport 11 million people is crazy.
Yeah.
He said 10 or 11. He didn't say million. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's not too many people. We can find
deport
them.
10 or 11 people.
But the point was, you know, then he pivoted. Then late in the game, he went all Reagan. And, you know, Reagan is great and big government bad. But I don't know who he thinks he's reaching to. It's like what we talked about. Chafee and Webb trying to reach to a non-existent middle in the Democratic side.
Right.
What middle does he think he's reaching to in the Republican
side?
Well,
him
anymore?
And Jim Webb can run independent campaigns, I guess, and have 5 votes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't get it.
Oh, yeah. And then Fiorita had this insane idea about a 73,000-page tax plan going to 3 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're looking at you, Danny, like you have the answer to that.
I really don't. I actually think that she was pretty much the highest on the bullshittery scene.
She often is.
Tonight.
Yeah.
She was previously with things that were just blatantly untrue. Tonight, I think that I saw almost like a real disingenuous amount of debate prep going on with her, where every question was... immediately returned with some sort of very rehearsed answer with lots of numbers,
mm-hmm.
and she's trying to do the I'm the CEO thing, and so she says like a lot of things that have numbers and mm-hmm. like a lot of things that are not even necessarily percentages, but gross mean domestic product kind of numbers, where it's like that might even be hard to fact check her on, depending on how she calculated it.
Yeah, and but, you know, I do give her credit. I think she pivoted and answered pretty well with the, you know, you got shit can from HP, explain yourself. She did about as well as she could with that, I thought.
I agree.
Sure.
Yeah. I agree. So the next kind of thing they talked about was kind of a one-off question to Rubio. And the guy who asked him was a little aggro, I'm going to say. And he just basically said, like, you've been criticized by other candidates for not doing your job. Do you hate your job?
Bush jumped on him.
Do you hate your job? Do you hate your job? And he just kept being like, other people have also not done their jobs. Like, and then he was like, Obama and Kerry, and all, he like named all these people who didn't do their jobs while they were campaigning.
Well, yeah. To be entirely fair, there are plenty of people who are beloved on the Democratic side of the aisle who have not been there for no votes. They just abstain and just don't show if they know they're going to abstain. And it was, particularly before everything got crazy after 2012, that was a pretty common thing around.
True,
I would say
prior
to 2009 in particular.
Let me jump in.
If you were going
to
abstain, you just didn't show up for the floor vote because you didn't show up to showboat about the fact that you were going to abstain from voting.
Yeah, but this is based on much more than that. There was an article in the Sun Sentinel, South Florida paper, that came out this morning, you know, really kind of trashing Rubio, but it went way beyond him just not showing up for Senate votes.
Sure.
There was a lot of very substantive stuff in there that, you know, he kind of deserved to take some hits for. And they didn't really get into that, which I didn't expect. But it was interesting where Jeb, you know, Jeb, his Palpatine-like mentor kind of turned on him there and figured, hey, this
he
is
did.
My main competition.
He said, look, I'm a constituent of your district, and you signed up for this. And then he mentioned something about a French work week and how,
so they touched on this a little bit, and I actually thought Rubio pivoted in a way that was, you know...
He was well-prepared.
Disingenuous, but it's something that he's been well-prepared to say for years.
Yes.
Which is, like, those are reports speaking specifically about some of the finance improprieties. Because if you remember back several years...
Improprieties. He's had to delve into some of his personal money to help with some
and
of his political
stuff. And that was way later.
Not just that, but, you know, he used his Senate... Well, state Senate credit card.
Do
a bunch of personal shit. And if you remember, I think 2009, 2010, that was a lot of big news about that all being uncovered and him saying, like, it was all paid back with my money.
Sure.
And there's a lot of questions about the paperwork, about whether or not that actually is true or not. It's impossible, really, to follow.
Well, one's really going to dig up that unless he becomes the front runner or wins the nomination.
Right, and that was way later when they were talking about whether or not he had the emotional and financial maturity to run the government.
Sure.
This was more about why you no do job. And Bush, like, hit him, and he was like, look, it's fine if you want to campaign. Lots of people have done that. What they do is they resign and they let someone else do the job that you were hired for.
He should have pointed at Rand Paul, too.
Uh-huh.
Because they're pissed in Kentucky.
Totally.
And in the
totally.
Senate,
yeah. And then that pivoted to a question to Jeb Bush from the moderators, because he was attacking Rubio. And Rubio, I think he answered it okay. But they asked him about because he's sort of the establishment candidate. And they said the Republican Party has become the, quote, know-nothing-ism party, which was a quote from Ben Bernanke in an article that they wrote, and how that came from the George W. Bush era of sort of it's better if we don't know anything and we're sort of proud of being stupid sort of stuff.
Like that better.
Yeah. And he kind of just deflected and said it's not a problem and Jobs and Obama and the left and
Hillary.
I think what's particularly important about that, if you don't know anything about Ben Bernanke, is the fact that he was appointed by George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
He served the entire time. He was retained by Barack Obama.
Yes.
Because Barack Obama said, no, he kind of seems he's been doing okay running the Fed. And then, now at this point, he has basically renounced the entire party and said, I don't want anything to do with them because
they're
acting like a bunch of fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to anything economic.
They made some decent, decent broad points about how the Fed maybe is too tied into Wall Street and monetary policy. But, you know, it fell apart when they got to the specifics because everything is, you know, tax breaks for everybody and no regulations on any corporations.
Right.
And somehow that helps the economy overall. But
and how does this answer the question that was asked, which was, why is your party proud of knowing nothing? Why are you against knowing stuff?
Well, that's a running theme to this, is that once they decided, okay, it's okay to turn on the moderators, they really, and you compare this to the Democratic debate, they really didn't answer the question.
No, they didn't say anything.
Everything was a prepared statement. Now, the Democrats did some of that, absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, but it was, like, to the nth degree tonight.
And if we look at the debates as a theme so far, I mean, we had a set of moderators who wanted to turn the entire dais into a set of mean girls.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a debate where everyone just said... again,
fuck your question. I'm just going to say what I want to say.
Exactly. Yeah. Fuck your question. I'm just going to ignore you. Then we had the Democratic debate where it was relatively pointed, but not necessarily nice from the moderator side.
Bernie diffused a lot of that, right?
Yeah.
Because they tried to get everybody to attack Hillary for Benghazi,
and
Bernie stepped in and said, no, we're not going to do that. Fuck
that. Exactly.
And I felt like the Republicans tried to mimic that tonight, where they were like, they would take a jab and then be like, but we're not taking jabs tonight because I like him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
asshole, and here's what he did wrong, but he's a nice guy and I like him. Like, they can't really help themselves, but then they try to say, I didn't say anything about
it's
him.
You
he's
guys.
Nice. It's you guys. It's your fault.
Terrible moderators.
But if you really want to compare the two, I mean, the Democrats saying we're not going to take jabs at the moderators, we're not going to take jabs at each other, they actually kind of stood by it, whereas the Republicans flung poo at each other, and then when they decided that it was time to turn against the moderators, they just flung poo at the moderators instead.
Which, again, it plays great with the base, but if you're an undecided, nonpartisan voter, you're probably like, what are these fucking whiny children doing?
Right. And I will say that from a respectful question point of view, this set of moderators did not have the most respectful set of questions, but I think that I have a theory for that, which is because it's a bunch of fucking clowns up there. And it's a bunch of people who know what they're talking about asking a bunch of clowns, why are
about
you running?
About the economy.
And the economy.
And it's a bunch of people who are economists asking clowns about the economy, and they're saying, listen, when you say this, it makes you sound like a fucking joker.
But yeah.
Well, we're going to get into him
like,
in a
can
minute.
You,
but
can you please tell me why you're not a joker on this? Because
a smoker, a midnight toker.
Or, yeah.
A literal comic book villain. I mean, it's crazy. Okay, to this point exactly, they asked Carly Fiorina next. Basically, she was like, you did a bad job at HP. The board fired you. And Fiorina goes into this whole, well, the guy who led my firing was this guy Perkins, and he's come out lately and said, he was right, I was wrong, or I'm sorry, he was wrong, I was right, and see, so it's fine. And the moderator came back and said, you know, Perkins had said some other things that are pretty crazy, such as more money you have, the more votes you should get.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pay a dollar into taxes in the economy, you should get one vote. If you pay $1 million into taxes in the economy, you should get 1 million votes.
Yeah, plutocracy.
So she just went, well, that's why we disagreed a lot. Anyway, I did a great job at HP, and they all agree. And it was, I was like,
oh.
So you can have it both ways?
Yeah.
Right. He's great, and I'm glad he's endorsed me, but he's awful?
The guy who decided to shit-can me now changed his mind, and they're like, the guy who shit-canned you is fucking Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And then turned around and said, well, I didn't get along with Darth Vader. It's
like, no, all of his ideas are crap, but it's important that he agrees with me.
Right. He came out later and said he was wrong about me. Isn't that great? But he's wrong about everything, so that's fine because we didn't get along. I don't know. And then when it started to disintegrate,
but she answered it quickly.
She did, and then it really disintegrated into pandemonium when they asked Ted Cruz about the debt ceiling, and he didn't answer that question.
He
just
said, "Fuck you, liberal asshole moderators."
Yeah, he brought up a bunch of questions that were asked he thought were unfair, and said, "You didn't see this in the Democratic debate, and you saw it here." And the guy kept being like, so you have 30 seconds left. I asked you about the debt ceiling. And he's like, I want to talk about substantive things. I want to talk about substantive issues. And he's like, cool, you have 20 seconds left about the debt ceiling. And he's like, I just want to say liberal media, blah. It was hilarious.
The crowd ate it up. It was really uncomfortable. And it was, I think, doubly uncomfortable for me to hear the cheers and applause when he was finally cut off and said, no, you're out of time. And he just kept talking. And everyone was like, woo! Like, let him talk. That made me feel doubly uncomfortable because it was like, that was a real big snafu in a debate if there were
But think about who his audience is.
Anthropods watching.
But the red meat of the base, who he desperately needs to get behind, is eating that shit up.
Yeah.
They love it. They don't care about the substance of what do you think of the big, a debt agreement that is no. I want to hear you talk about how horrible the liberal media is. And that's what gets their jimmies rustled. And so.
And I'm sure that the base was mad at the moderators because they were asking tough questions and actually not letting people get by with political answers on several occasions. And so if that's your guy up there and you see the mean people make your people have their fifis hurt, you go like, fuck those guys, and then they come out and say fuck you, and you're like, that's what I was saying, like it's an echo chamber.
And I think it was definitely echo chamber tonight, but I think that a lot of the moderators got a lot of heat from the crowd several times when they got booed, and this will come up several times, but just as a theme,
when they circled back and
fact check stuff and said, like, you know, hey, we'd like to come back and ask you about this question because you said that you never said this, and we just found the exact quote, and it's on your website.
And they just denied it, or Trump denied things he said.
We'll talk about this specifically as they come up, but these moderators were not fucking around.
No.
Correct.
Even though they might have been a little harsh particular positions.
I could
they
just
were not
feel Rince Priebus backstage just cursing and like chain smoking and fucking CNBC. I knew it. We all should have been Fox.
Well,
God, damn it.
You know that CNBC just lost the contract to have any debate ever moderated by them ever again. From the RNC.
They're gone.
You know, that's what Rince Priebus was doing in the back room
the entire time.
And
it's also setting up, I don't know who's doing the next Democratic debate, but now there's going to be enormous pressure for those moderators to
so the next one is Rachel Maddow.
Well, she'll ask tough questions.
She will.
And that's the ironic thing. See, the Republicans are going to lose their shit and go, oh, Maddow's going to toss softballs. Like, no. You haven't been paying attention.
No, she will not.
You haven't watched the last two interviews with Bernie
and
Hillary. She asks tough questions.
Yes.
But she asks them respectfully. kind of respectfully
yeah.
and almost apologetically, but she asks right. tough questions.
It's actually going to, I think, kind of bite them in the ass if they pull this fucking liberal media crap. And then
And
they've held her up as the golden fucking goose of, well, whatever, the golden god, whatever, of the person who's going to be softball on them because she's
the devil, right?
Yeah, well, she's the devil on the liberal media side.
Oh, yeah.
And if she starts talking to fucking Bernie Sanders and says, you know, ask him very, very fucking tough questions about...
she will. She'll ask them all tough questions.
Well, and the same kind of questions they got tonight about actual fucking numbers.
They'll come out different, though.
And, well...
She's not going to say, are you a super villain? Or...
No, of course not.
Well, I mean, maybe she might, because she's kind of funny, but she's not going to ask if you're a super villain.
She's a much better interviewer and questioner than the CNBC people.
Okay, yes. she's a serious journalist. Yes. Let's just point that out.
And if she's going to make a joke in her questions, it'll be an obvious joke. I don't even know what that super villain joke or comic book
I got it. They were saying, like, are you being a farce of a political candidate for president? Because it seems like it to everybody else except the base.
I read a lot of comic books. I've seen a lot of comic books.
You know what Rachel Maddow is not going to bother doing, though? She's not going to say some article said this or that. She might cite it, but she'll have a good informed question that she synthesized herself.
Correct.
That's relevant. Which in the defense of the Republicans tonight, you know, CNBC kind of took the cheap way out on a lot of these questions. Like, so-and-so wrote an article that said you're a dumbass. How do you respond?
And they kept being, I didn't say that. Yeah. And they're like, oh, so the article was saying was wrong? And they're like, yeah. And then they came back and fact-checked a couple of things and said, oh, this came directly from the Donald J. Trump for President website, and it says specifically that you think that this person, Marco Rubio, is the left hand of the...
It's fine, though, because the Trump supporters don't read anything critical of Trump anyway, so as far as they're concerned, that article doesn't exist.
Right.
Right.
All right, hold on.
Wait, I want to say one thing that was very obviously adversarial between the candidates and mm-hmm. the moderators. Was several times there was an exchange where one of the candidates would say, you wrote that article, or, you know, that was an article your colleague wrote that he quoted you in, and that kind of thing. And then
Yeah, it was pretty incestuous, so it was hard for the moderators to be like, no, it was legitimate, even though it's the person sitting next to me who wrote it, I'm quoting.
I don't have a dog in this fight, because I hold CNBC in about the same regard as Fox Business.
Utter derision. Well, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, yes. CNBC is the Republican wing of the NBC family.
The Wall Street big corporate...
I actually thought it was really cute in a way that they tried to talk about CNBC as, like, this weird liberal... left-wing...
Sure, it's the perfect opportunity for them to do it, right? Especially if they're trying to hammer on the whole income inequality thing.
For people who have no fucking idea, they'd be like, oh, it does have NBC kind of tagged onto it. Sure. I know something
no,
else
yeah, their
has
watchers
NBC
watch nothing but Fox,
it.
Maybe Fox Business.
Yeah.
All right, I'm pivoting back to the debate.
Okay.
So, what they were talking about when everything sort of melted down was about Social Security and entitlements and the debt ceiling and budget negotiations and a lot of that stuff. And they pivoted to Rand Paul, of course, because he's the big everything about the budget sucks and the government shouldn't have one. And he said exactly what you'd expect him to say. He was talking specifically about why he opposes this new deal from the Republican House
mm-hmm.
and the White House, because they take money from entitlements to put to the military. And fuck Ryan. That's not going to be a change. And
he's the only one that would really,
quote,
really took on Ryan.
I'm not worried about keeping the government open.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about the debt, unquote. That's a sentence he said out loud.
Yeah.
And to Dana's point earlier about Paul Ryan and his ascension and his determination to have a unified party and to make people compromise, it is really interesting that Rand Paul then comes in and says, no, we're still not going to do any of that.
He's a senator, but he wasn't the only one. They all took shots. He's the one that mostly took it head on, though. And, of course, it's tied into the fact that he's going to do this fake filibuster. And, you know, he's trying to reclaim the whole, you know, this whole Freedom Caucus thing. No, let's blow it all up, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with shutting down the government. You might as well say there's nothing wrong with defaulting on the debt, because that's right. what he wants to do as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, the interesting thing I thought from this entire perspective was that Rand Paul was the only person, you know, up there who was willing to, you know, jump out there and say, like, I'm going to still try to kill this. Everyone else called out a terrible plan, and then other people ignored that and talked about other plans that are terrible, like mm-hmm. the TPP was brought up once, the Iran that. Deal was brought up twice,
yeah,
maybe three times the Iran deal was brought up.
Yeah.
Well, the Republicans don't want to go too far out in saying trade deals are bad, because in general, they...
It's their fucking plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Their donors are all about trade yeah. plans. You don't want to yeah. go too far out on
yeah.
that limb.
Yeah, yeah. So and just then, because Obama supports it is not...
It's,
I mean,
Obama
always,
supports it, they have to fling some shit at it, but they can't take a big stand and say trade deals are bad.
Right.
No, the yeah. Iran deal, they did bring up many times.
Yeah.
A couple
yeah.
times, yeah.
And then, you know, with the thing that's going to happen immediately, the reason that I really think it stood out for me that, you know, Paul Ryan, you know, went out on such a limb to say, like, I'm going to be spending my entire, the next 2 days making sure this doesn't happen, is that there's zero fucking chance it's not going to happen.
Like, no.
Why would you say that you're going to die on a hill that there's no way you can ascend?
Well,
like, you're going to die on that hill, man.
I'm interested to see the Republicans' reaction to this debate, if they just shrug it all off. Fine, if they kind of overreact to some stuff tonight, maybe things get dicey tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah, I know, it's going to be interesting.
Not
yeah.
that I'm not that, you know, not that I'm rooting for Republican chaos in the Congress.
Oh no, but, not at all. Where would we do that? That'd be awful.
Yeah, what if they watch this and they're all fired up and they're like, "Hell no, no deal and fuck Ryan," and you know, I mean, you never know with that party and that caucus, God only knows what'll get in their heads. I don't think so, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
What else you got, Rach?
All right, so there was a fight between Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee.
Oh, that was beautiful.
About Social Security.
Sumo match.
A little bit of a sumo match. Yes. Chris Sorry, Christie Ben. Was sort of saying he's trying to be his brand of, I'm going to be a straight shooter and I'm going to tell you the hard truth. And he mm-hmm. was like, we can't lie to the American people anymore.
Yeah, because
he
never
They've already
does that.
Stole the money. No, I didn't shut bridges down. I didn't do these things. It's fine.
Most trustworthy already... politician I've ever seen.
Yeah, they've already stolen the money out of Social Security. So the only way that we're going to do anything is to be honest first and to fix, to sort of acknowledge that that's already gone. Like his opinion is like that money is gone, it's never coming back.
Yeah.
And so now we have to cut it, and Hillary Clinton wants to raise it, and I don't think we should do that, and we've already broken the social compact because they've already stolen it. And Mike Huckabee, famous champion of old people in commercials about things,
magical diabetes
pills, magical drugs and gold, came back and said
five times.
Oh God. Came back and said, like, no, we stole, we lied, and he wanted to talk about Social Security as not an entitlement, that people paid into it, and
which
they
is true.
Deserve to get that money
which
out.
Which is true.
That's true. That's true. That is just not the reality. And he doesn't have, I don't think, because he didn't have a plan to fix the problem. He just said, this is not a monetary issue, it's a moral issue, because fucking everything is a moral issue with Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, that's his claim to fame.
Well, and I mean, I said this a couple times during the debate, and you guys both kind of looked at me like you thought that maybe there was some nuance I was missing. But mm-hmm. With the entitlement programs, I feel like the Republicans treat it like it's less of an insurance program and more like
a
government-mandated savings
program. Yeah, he literally
program.
Said it was a Ponzi scheme at one point.
Well, and one of them said it was a Ponzi scheme. Yeah, not one of us in the room. But
no, Mike Huckabee
Mike,
said.
Mike Huckabee
They've
said
that
it was
before.
A Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind that anyone would ever treat an entitlement program where it's intended to take create a social safety net and treat it like it's anything other than an insurance program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it should be treated the exact same way. Maybe not precisely the exact same way because it's government mandated, but mm-hmm. For Mike
insurance.
Huckabee to have said so many times, you paid so many dollars into it, it doesn't matter what you make. The one that really hit me in the feels was when he said, if you have a 7-bedroom house, should the government come in and take the other 2 bedrooms of your house if they determine that you only need a 5-bedroom house?
Yeah, that's solidarity.
I'm like, that makes me feel like you don't know what you're talking about at all.
Plus, what are you trying to say? How many of the middle American low-income people you're reaching out to?
He was talking about means testing, and he was saying, if you have a 7-bedroom house and the government determines you don't need Social Security because you should only be living in a 5-bedroom house,
then it's not fair.
Then it's not fair, and that is not what we're talking about.
Taking the other 2 bedrooms away from right. you, which is like so abstractly
no, it's tone deaf
weird.
And it's bullshit, and it makes no sense mm-hmm. at all. But his base, and I'm not talking about his potential for being an actual candidate for the Republican nomination.
No, a Huckabee's
he doesn't it. Think he has that either. The base he's looking for is the base of people that are going to follow him when he gets out, that are going to buy his books and buy his bullshit diabetes drug snake mm-hmm. oil and watch him on whatever nonsense thing he thinks he's going to get out of
this. His new Fox show or his appointment at the Family Research Council.
Right.
Or whatever
he's just going for the base who's going to continue to follow him because he spoke to their issues, and that's old, gullible
white people.
Or I could
see him as a VP candidate, especially if it's somebody like a Trump who needs to protect his evangelical flank.
Sure, maybe.
Trump Huckabee, could you
Jesus,
imagine?
I would love everything about that.
Oh my God.
Okay, can we move on?
Yes, let's move on.
Because we have
on.
A lot to cover. Okay, so Jim Cramer.
I was so excited when he showed up. I thought that he like just had to show up late. I didn't know that they were going to keep doing this thing where it was just like, we're going to do the round table of all of the random...
They've all done that.
CNBC
point,
people?
Yeah.
Well... Yeah. I haven't noticed it so far. Maybe I've just been drinking too much, but...
Now, Fox did the same thing. They would bring
like,
Hugh Hewitt for a question, or...
In this particular one, they brought people in for, like, a question or two, and then they rotated someone new in.
And what did Cramer ask about
two.
Again? It was
all
something...
All right, so I thought I was really happy with his question. I am completely baffled by the answer, but that's normal. So Jim Cramer came in and asked Dr. Ben Carson about the increase on prices of pharmaceuticals for life-saving drugs when you buy a new company, the sort of Shrillick thing with the AIDS drug stuff.
Yeah.
I have... My notes are as varied as my thoughts because I couldn't possibly pick apart what he said.
He gave
said
a weird
basically,
roundabout answer.
Don't pick on people... Stop regulating drugs. That's the way to make people have better drugs.
Abolish the FDA.
I don't even know what the fuck that means, and he's a goddamn
okay that,
neurosurgeon.
Though,
he's a neurosurgeon.
As a regulatory professional, I can tell you, abolish the FDA is one of the most outlandish,
Well,
retarded...
he didn't say that, but he said, like, we shouldn't regulate drugs or something like that.
He said it without saying
basically.
It. Well,
yeah.
Who knows what the fuck he said, because he just speaks in half sentences.
Which,
so
which works, apparently.
It was a bad idea for us to do the drug thing with the regulations.
Bad idea for you to
do
the drug thing,
differently.
Ben.
Or not.
Ben, buddy,
it's
if you're listening.
To change your prescription.
The drug thing, it's not working for you. And maybe you should talk to your doctor.
Especially if you're
going
to speak
that
way
insane.
Talking about drug regulation. Like, it's a little ironic.
All right, moving on. We got to speed it up here. We'll be here all night.
All right, all right. Let's see. They talked about net neutrality a tiny bit with Carly Fiorina. They asked her about back in the day, she was opposed to taxing purchases made on the internet versus taxes that are made in your local mom and pop shop and or any brick and mortar shop. And she's changed her mind because it's different now, I guess, because the law's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically said... A weird populist message. She kept doing this all night. Big government favors big and wealthy people and corporations and not small businesses. She talked about crony capitalism and explained what that meant. And then somehow said that deregulation is the answer. I struggle with that one too. The dotted lines did not come in for me.
No, they never do with these folks, and that's once they get into a general and they have to debate the Democratic candidate, this double talk about income inequality and let's deregulate everything so corporations are free to do whatever they want, and then I guess they're going to say the invisible hand of the free market fixes everything, and I hope to God somebody brings up Kansas and the Rick Scott administration in Florida about what the hell happens when you try that crazy libertarian utopia.
No, Rick Scott and Sam Brownback are, I think, fair game for questions in this round.
Yeah, they're the
and
test market for the, what these people are talking about.
The thing that was really interesting to me about what they were talking about this time is they were not trying to do the full trickle-down economics thing. They really all took a sidestep away from what Romney was talking about,
mm-hmm.
which was still a bastardization of Reaganomics. But this time, they just went with full deregulation and then just sidestepped every fact about what that would mean. And we're like,
sure.
Well, if we deregulate the companies, then they don't have to...
Or even had the gall to bring up the housing crash and didn't talk about how deregulation in the markets led to that.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was particularly insulting.
And the CNBC people of all people... Well, of course, they're not going to say it because, you know, assholes like Jim Cramer were telling everybody not to dump their...
Jim Cramer in particular, that would crash his entire career if he asked a bad question about it. But.
Nobody wanted to talk about Phil Graham's crazy bank deregulation and how they didn't want to regulate any of the derivatives trading and everything else that caused the housing crash and may cause it again. No, we don't want to talk about that.
No, we don't.
No, and on top of that, like it seemed like the way that they were all trying to talk about deregulation was this really crazy double talk about how... if we make companies give you 401ks too early, it's going to crash the company. And stuff that's like...
And how we already do that. And I have to say, as a small business owner, I'm listening to them talk about small business owners and going, what the fuck are you talking about? None of that is truthful at all, factual, affects any... unless small business is, like, less than 5,000 people, which I wouldn't define as a small business, like, none of that's true. I'm just saying, from truth and fact. No.
As a small business owner / job creator, because you have three employees...
I do.
At what point do you feel that the government is going to force you out of business because you have to have a 401k?
At no point. I also really love when they talk about how taxes are what's preventing job growth.
Mm-hmm.
Just a brief aside, that's fucking bullshit. For anyone who doesn't know, I own a small business, and the reason that I have to hire people is not ever based on the tax rate that I pay. It is entirely based on the need that I have as a business to have more help. And so what my tax rate is just built into my cost of business. The reason I hire people is because my business has grown and I can no longer do it myself, or I can no longer do it with my staff. And that's why I hire people. Taxes have literally nothing to do with what I think about, ever. If the tax went up another 5% or 10%, that doesn't affect how many people I need to do the job that has to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand that argument at all. And I think it's a red herring. And I just want to get that out there.
Perfect.
From my perspective.
So moving on, we may have to skip some stuff here.
What I really want to talk about, because what we love the most is the seedy domestic issues. And somehow CNBC managed to get to them. And so the first thing they talked about was wage inequality, gender inequality, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty quick, passed over, but they basically said to Ted Cruz, hey, wage inequality, you've said some shitty things about that. Do you want to clarify? And then he did the I have black friends thing. And
already said it's all Obama's fault.
I have lots of single women in my family. And my father left. And then thank God he was invited to a Bible study. So now I'm okay. But other people aren't. And then he didn't actually address wage inequality at all.
No.
Then Fiorina came out and said Clinton, all of her policies have been bad for women because all the ladies lost their jobs under Obama, which is all just nonsense.
It's one of those things that I actually fact-checked because she cited a specific
number. The 95% thing, which has been debunked. The 95% of people lost their job were women.
I had to do that when she said it, and that is fucking pants on fire.
Yeah, yeah, it's
like
been debunked.
45 places on the internet. Yeah. Like, everyone is...
Years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they asked Ben Carson about gay stuff. hey,
you, said that.
You love Costco, or you're part of Costco, or
they
something?
Don't hate the gays.
Ben Carson about
stuff. And then he said, I don't even know. I have a struggle with what he says, but he basically said, the Constitution.
Your notes are so amazing.
The Constitution protects
exactly,
everyone.
You wrote the word for word, gay stuff. Costco.
Can you buy that there?
Protocols everywhere, but marriage,
no, Constitution
blah.
Protects everyone, but marriage, blah.
Okay.
No, just...
You're just
then
notes,
he said,
your notes read to me like he sounds when he talks.
I know, that's what my brain
excellent
does.
Excellent stenographer.
Just because I believe the Constitution protects everyone doesn't mean, quote, you should assume that marriage equality or being against marriage equality means I'm homophobic. Which is hilarious.
Well, okay, so I think this is interesting because him campaigning on the idea that I'm not homophobic, but my personal feelings have nothing to do with what I think law should be based on my religion, I want my law to be right based on my religion, but my personal feelings, I'm just going to hold those aside.
Maybe the circular logic makes sense in Ben Carson's brain.
I can't understand the biggest applause line of the night with this line.
Which was, it's just another product of PC culture. Yeah. And everyone went, what?
All the good Boulder Republicans.
All the 100 of them, which I'd like to point out, right?
So there's None of them CU Boulder students, which weren't allowed in.
There was 1,000 people allowed in a 10,000 person auditorium, and only 100 tickets were given to members of the CU community.
Mm-hmm.
So 100 students, faculty, staff, members were allowed in out of 1,000 people total in a building that could hold 10,000 people. Just saying.
Yep.
Okay.
Good times.
So before we go straight back to the notes, I had one thing that I really wanted to talk about, which was the Ben Carson Manatech thing, and I'll be very brief about it, but it tickled my funny bone that he immediately, so it was brought up, the moderator said, so, you know, basically you stumped for this drug, and you said that you would like to talk about lowering drug prices and particularly with the, you know, recent, what's the name of the company that did it?
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. Everyone knows the pill went from $1,375 to $750 overnight. Ben Carson has been talking about that particular thing, saying that it's not really a big deal, that, you know, one-time drug price increases are not a big deal, especially when they are competitive. And he was called out because it turns out that's obviously not competitive, and that's been called out in many places.
Sure, it's ridiculous.
And he's been asked about, as a neurosurgeon, now that you're speaking out about drug company pricing, how would you like to speak about this particular issue from his past, which is how he had stumped and or advertised for a drug company, well, they're not really a drug company. They're more of a supplement company.
Right. And he said he wasn't involved.
Yeah. And supplements.
This was so great.
I'm a super nerd about this. Supplements get to be allowed to make claims that drugs that don't drugs necessarily do not.
Because
right.
the way
be
they're classified
to.
By the FDA.
Yeah.
Right.
Because of the way they're classified by the FDA. And the FDA is trying to crack down on supplements, but it's really hard because if they classify themselves as a supplement, they go into a different class, blah, blah, blah.
And they have a lot of lobbyists.
And so, lots of lobbyists.
Ben Carson's been working for this company called Manatech.
And he was called out by one of the moderators tonight, and he said, like, you know, I think it was Becky who said, you know, you have had this relationship with this company, and you've said all these things.
And he said, no, I did.
And he's like, no, I why would you say I have a relationship with them?
I would never say that
I've ever had an involvement or a relationship with them. But, you know.
Stumped. He made paid speeches for them. And
yeah, he's made 4 paid videos.
He showed up in the commercials.
And he showed up in all their commercials.
And then he does my favorite thing. Do I take the product personally? Yes. Do I like it? Yes.
Do I think it works? Yeah, I think it works really great. He basically did an infomercial in the middle of the fucking debate.
And while denying
it, I have no involvement with these people.
It
was insane. It was insane.
Oh, my God.
I really hope he gets called out for that. You know, Mr. Huckabee stayed silent, too.
Right.
Well, sure.
Well, they didn't question Huckabee about it, but they should have. Okay, next topic, because we're running out of time. They did talk about guns for a minute. And my favorite.
For a hot minute.
Just for a minute. And they asked Trump, because he had made some comments about how people are safer, more guns, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out that at many Trump resorts, guns are prohibited from guests, even if you have an open carry permit. So they asked Trump, should your employees be allowed to bring guns to work? And he had a really tough time with this question. He answered it the way he thinks they want him to answer
exactly,
against Trump normal style. Yeah. But he said, yeah. I think my employees should be allowed to bring guns to work.
It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then he's like,
I have my own open carry permit and I carry, and they're like, are you carrying right now? And then he goes this line, I like to be unpredictable and I like to carry sometimes and not carry sometimes pivots somehow into Obama and his foreign policy being predictable because everyone always knows what we're going to do. And they bring him back because these moderators are not fucking around. And they're like, so you have several gun-free properties. Would you change those policies? And he just goes, I mean, it's fine. Sure. I mean, fuck it. If you get me president, I'll change the policy. Yeah, I don't give a shit.
He's going to let people run around his properties with guns.
Well, no, right? I thought that was a misdirected question because they're asking about the people who work there. And if we're really going to go with the full NRA policy,
you want some disgruntled employees showing up?
No, not just the disgruntled employees. I'm talking about the resort guests. What about the open carry policy for the resort guests?
Yeah, that's gonna end real well, sure.
Well, obviously, but of course it's not going to end well, but if he's saying that if somebody came onto a Trump resort and opened fire, the more guns, good guys with guns that are there to stop the situation, the better, then wouldn't it be great if all of Trump's fabulous, five-star, amazing, winning resort guests,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it be great if they were all carrying fucking gold-plated fucking 22s to go...
Because let's not worry about the schools or anything. It's at the Trump resorts where all the mass shootings are happening.
Exactly, and wouldn't he love it if they were?
Yeah, that was lame, but I mean, they're going to cover that in detail next debate when they get into all that shit. So that was kind of a throwaway.
Yeah. Well, actually, the next debate apparently is the economy again, because that's the only thing they're comfortable talking about. But I loved how CNBC did pivot to... They would bring up like a weird topic and then sort of go, and that relates to guns.
They have to bring up hate the gays and the vaginas and the immigrants sometime.
I mean, they have to, right? Yeah. They talked about climate change. And they asked Chris Christie. They asked Chris Christie some questions, and he hit them back on the fantasy football thing. Do you want to talk about that, Travis?
He acknowledged climate change is a thing.
Yes.
He acknowledged climate change is a thing. He didn't. What he said to address it made no sense at all, but he did not get up there and say it's a conspiracy.
Hurricane Sandy. No, he knows for a fact. But do you want to just do a little tiny play-by-play of the fantasy football
thing? I actually kind of missed the fantasy football thing.
Okay.
I heard Chris Christie blow up about it afterwards, but I didn't understand. I didn't hear the question.
Okay, really quick primer because I don't want to waste any time on this. There are two sites out there. One is called FanDuel. One is called something, and you can bet on fantasy football by picking certain players, and if they do well and you're in these pools with these other people, you can win money. It's basically gambling, but it's not exactly gambling because you're betting on certain players and not an entire team. So it's totally gambling. It's a loophole, and they're making a lot of money, and who the fuck cares?
And that's what Christie said. Who the fuck cares about? Are we talking about fantasy football right now in a debate?
And I agreed with him. I don't know why CNBC brought that question.
I don't either.
Well,
and so then
I actually can venture a guess, and it's because Chris Christie has ties to gambling.
He's the
governor of New Jersey, you guys.
But
come on,
you know we got bigger fish to fry than you know the online fantasy sports.
So while he's on the main stage, they asked him about climate change, and they said, you know, you've made some statements that are kind of the Republican base doesn't love about climate change is a real thing, and he did not say it wasn't. He hit Hillary a little bit and Kerry and Obama and taxes are bad. But then he did say, like,
he said big government shouldn't solve climate change.
Right. We should invest in all types of energy, natural gas, oil, wind, solar, all that stuff.
So you had a Republican on a debate stage not deny climate change.
Correct.
That is a big step forward. Of course, Christie's toast anyway.
What is he, 3%?
But somebody, and nobody else wanted to touch it, which I found was interesting.
No one else discussed it at all.
I would think somebody would have jumped in and said, it's a hoax, and Al Gore, it's a money making thing, because that's what's going on in Congress. Which we'll get to in another podcast.
I'm actually surprised that Christie didn't call anyone else out, but I don't think that he was allowed to because he just said, I'm not going to call anyone else out.
Like Jeb Bush's abysmal climate change in Florida?
Chris Christie has a pretty okay climate change record.
Yeah.
So if he was going to yell at anyone else and be like, I'm the only one on this stage, blah, blah, blah,
because this whole theme of the night was we can't be slinging shit at each other, and aren't we all great as compared to those Democrats, which Rubio then later picked up on.
Yeah, I feel like he had to hold his tongue on that one.
Even in the end, Chris Christie was quoted as saying, GOP debates are civil and ideas are lobbed around.
Bad ones.
And the Democrats have no ideas, and all they want to do is promise you free stuff.
Yeah, very typical.
Very
I give credit for Christie for one thing. He really gave it the old college try. He really tried to get back in the game tonight as hard as he could.
He was the guy I was always afraid of till the whole scandal thing happened. Yeah, I agree.
No, yeah, he won't. He's dead meat still. But he sure tried.
Also, I think Rubio got the biggest clap lines tonight. He talked about the media. He talked about his single mom, as though that makes his policy any better.
He said the media is the Democrat super PAC, which doesn't make any sense if you speak English.
I actually thought that what he was doing was taking advantage of the fact that he was dealing with Republican primary voters who have been forced to watch the first CNBC program they've ever watched in their entire lives to tell them what you are watching right now is Republican propaganda. And I think that's why they all had that adversary. Sure. The first time they've ever been forced to do that.
Yeah.
Your fifis, don't worry. They heard all of our.
Well, CNBC set him up for it with the way they asked the questions.
Yeah. Now you guys think about it. Like, the first time that an entire generation of Fox viewers have ever been forced to watch a CNBC program in their entire life is to watch a Republican primary, and all the questions are super mean. Of course, that's why the Frank Luntzes of the world fucking told them, treat the moderators like super meanies and constantly bring up why the liberal media are such jerks all the time, because this is going to be the first time they're going to see something from this side. And it wasn't nice, but it wasn't unfair either.
But what is that? What does that do besides throw red meat at their frothing base?
Oh, it just throws red meat at their frothing base, but that's good enough for right now, right?
Yeah, I guess so. That's fair.
I guess. I mean, it sort of deflates any logistical argument or factually based argument that the moderators made that the candidates couldn't answer, as they just deflected it and said, oh, nope, see, this is just that media again trying to get us to answer gotcha questions and trying to make us mad at each other. And don't worry about what that question means, and don't worry about what answer I should have given. I wasted my entire time talking about how I didn't want to answer that question because I didn't get enough time, and you guys are meanies.
Now imagine if Hillary had answered that way on Capitol Hill.
Right?
For fuck's sake.
Those bullshit questions.
I think we'll
do wrap up in a second, but I think it also buys you all the talking points on Fox News about how everything was so super unfair.
Yeah.
And every campaign headquarters gets to throw immediately up onto their websites about what a fucking snipe job was done.
I stood up to the liberal media. Send me $100.
We stood up to them. I'm going to be the candidate who's going to stand up to them. Look how when they asked me an unfair question, how I
threw
it back in their face.
There's still a ton of them.
Give me $100.
Okay, go. Let's wrap this up.
All right. So they went and let every candidate do their little wrap up. They started with Rand Paul. Very obviously, he said, small government good, and I don't like the new deal with the debt ceiling and the thing. Yeah. Chris Christie, taxes are bad. Debt, bad. Changing culture of Washington. Very, very just boring.
Yeah, talking points.
Ted Cruz, I am only a meanie to Washington. That's my notes. I am only a meanie to Washington.
Wait, didn't Ted Cruz call Hillary Clinton and Bernie communists and Bolsheviks, or he said,
yeah, that was earlier in the debate. Yeah, he said one of them is a Bolshevik and one of them is a Menshevik.
Oh, nice.
Which is a little anti-Semitic and also kind of Hitler-y all at the same time. Like,
I actually, when he said that, I was like, oh, you're gonna pay for that, man.
No, he's not. He says that kind of shit all the time.
And then there was a giant laugh line, and so sad.
He had another crazy one too. But
yeah, Fiorina said, everything she reflected that whole night. Nothing ever gets done. I'm going to be the one to do it. And then she did this bullshit. What it takes to be secretary to CEO for the ladies out there. Hey, for the ladies out there, what it takes to get from secretary to CEO. It's just gross.
Here's one for the ladies.
Oh, my God. It's disgusting.
I was going to say, if she could say her entire stump speech with an Isaac Hayes voice,
she might have a chance.
Rest in peace, unfortunately. He's gone. He can't.
All right, Carson, I don't even know, because it's what I say every time. I'm sorry. I have thanks, guys, with a question mark, because he was sort of like, thanks, everybody up here, and you guys, and also people asking the questions and in the crowd, and patriot stuff about freedom, liberty. Is that good? Am I done? Like, I don't even know. He didn't say anything.
And watch him jump in the polls again. I don't get it.
Oh,
I've given up on trying to figure it out.
Yeah, Trump, we are losers. I'll win.
Same old thing.
And then he did this weird thing about how they were trying to have a 3 to 3.5 hour debate, and he didn't want to do that because of commercials. And so he and Carson went to CNBC
and said no.
And said no. And then the moderators shot back at him and were like, that was bullshit. It was always going to be 2 hours. And there was a little firestorm.
It's semantics, because what the Trump and Carson campaigns did is said, we're going to make it 2 hours with the commercials. And then it's whatever. It's a bullshit argument.
But there was a little thing.
But it was a perfect setup for Trump to say, I took on
I did. I did my thing and I made it only 2 hours for you guys.
Thank you, Rubio. Donald, if you shortened it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Trump. Actually, I will say that.
You know, if Trump is responsible for making that any shorter, thank Christ.
Like, yeah.
I'm sorry. Thank Trump. Same difference, according to him.
Rubio, immigrant, American dream.
Except fuck the immigrants now.
Right, but he's one.
We'll get to that,
though.
We'll get to that.
Bush, very establishment, boring, traditional speech. Here's my record. I was a governor. I was a businessman. Yeah. I'm going to be a unifier. I'm boring.
He's
you don't
in trouble.
Care about
I don't
me.
Think he helped
I
himself
know.
At all tonight.
I don't either
but
at all.
Again, I get this wrong a lot.
At
so
all.
Who knows?
Huckabee, media is mean. Let's bring it back to the 1950s. Debt is bad. Morals are good. Blah, blah, blah. Just the same old Huckabee, religious right, crazy conservative, fringy weirdo.
Uh-huh.
So the last two, I don't want to drag this out anymore, but Huckabee talking about the media being bad. And Jeb Bush talking about the government being bad. I can't figure out why either one of them are running for president.
But that's been a theme going back to Reagan and before. The government is bad. Government sucks. We should abolish all of government.
So run for me for government.
So put me at the head of it because I want to be the biggest person in government.
Grandpa literally said, I'm not concerned about shutting the government down.
Make me president of this non-functioning government.
Government.
I mean,
no, there's been that cognitive dissonance for decades.
No, I agree. It's been around for a lot of campaigns. Particular one, this particular debate, just to be topical, Jeb Bush being like, you know, I was governor, but more importantly, I ran a company for, I think he said 28, maybe 38 years. I don't know.
He ran a bunch of different companies, and most of them tanked, just like his brother.
Well, of course. It's just like... Okay, but the point is when you say, like, I ran a company and I can run the government just like a company because that's how government should be run is like companies because governments can't do anything.
Those guys never get elected, by the way.
No, of course not, but I don't understand why you'd even run up that tree.
Because that's all you got.
Well, yeah.
All right, last thing that I want to talk about is Kasich. Who lost his fucking mind tonight? I'm going to just say... McCasick? In true Dana fashion.
Who's McCasick? McCasick.
Oh, McCasick.
Is that wrong? Is it McCasick?
It might be McCasick.
McCasey? No, his closing statement was sort of bottom up is better, but also with a bootstraps thing. And
something Reagan.
And then, but I feel like all night he went from the only guy on the stage that I could look at that I thought was reasonable at all.
Yeah.
To this sort of foaming at the mouth, what happened? What are you saying? What the fuck? Kasich.
Yeah.
To now he's just like a weirdly less moderate, but still not conservative enough guy. Like, he's done. He's out.
Yeah, yeah. I thought his performance was horrible.
Yeah, we all waved goodbye to him about three times.
Yeah,
that debate. We were just like, bye-bye. We really liked having you up on the stage, but...
Bye-bye, yeah.
Bye.
Okay, well, let's make our fearless predictions then, which, you know, I don't know if they're going to work out or come true or what, but... you know, I'm not even paying attention this time to the fake Frank Luntz focus groups that always are 100% wrong anyway. You know, like the first one, they're like, oh, Jeb Bush was great and Trump is done. And then after the debate, Bernie Sanders won and Hillary's done. It's like, nope, that's not what happened. So God knows what he'll say this time. But my impressions are, I think Trump may have stabilized himself a little bit just by showing him more Trump. And then if you liked Trump a few weeks ago, maybe you were reminded of that. I don't know. I throw up my hands and plead ignorance on what is going on with Ben Carson. So maybe this helped him. Maybe it hurt him. Maybe he's going to run for president of Mars. I just don't fucking know. Jeb, I don't think helped himself at all. I think it was more boring, waffly crap that nobody's interested in. I think he's in big, big trouble. Could be wrong. Rubio, I think, helped himself.
Me too.
Even though Rubio has really... bizarrely, monstrously huge ears, I noticed.
I know, we were looking at for the first time, all of us went, what happened with his ears?
Star Trek with the
Ferengi?
Ferengi. He looked a little Ferengi.
No, really, he looks like, you know when people get really old and your ears keep growing, so you see like a 98-year-old person and their ears take up like half their head?
But he's like 44.
Yeah, but we have a 98-year-old person running on our side and his ears are fine.
No, his ears are pretty big too, but not as big as Rubio's. Anyway, look, the point is, Rubio was very polished and well-prepared. He still, when he speaks, he looks nervous and unsure of himself in a weird way.
Yeah.
But
People seem to like him, though.
He was very well-prepared. He had the best applause lines. I think he helped himself.
I do too. I'm gonna say Rubio helped himself the most tonight. Carson, again, I'm with you. Fucking clueless. Trump did seem a little more measured tonight. I'm gonna say Cruz is just vying for vice president at this point, sucking everybody's dick. Just like, hey guys, I don't hate any of you.
I don't know, man. But every time I see him, I feel like he is nonsensical and is just rehearsing something that he just spent 3 weeks in a bunker talking about.
Well, sure, but we're talking about the GOP nomination, so right. That's exactly what they
I think Christie helped himself, too. I think Rubio...
Yeah, I guess.
Christie
seems more off the hip. Cruz seems like... I'm talking directly into the camera the time.
Look,
although Christie did the exact same tactic,
Christie,
too.
Despite all his Hillary Democrat bashing, said... He told, sorry, seniors, your Social Security money's gone. And he also said climate change is a thing. Those things aren't going to fly.
I think who's out, if I'm going to make that prediction, is Rand Paul. He's out.
Kasich.
This is boring. No one cares what you say and no one gives a shit.
No one's going to watch your
filibuster. Kasich's done. Huckabee's done. And I think Bush did not help himself tonight. He got less airtime than I would have imagined he would have. And when he had it, it was very bland establishment, sort of.
He went after Rubio, which is, and you know what? The crowd sided with Rubio. They didn't want to hear it.
Exactly.
They weren't impressed. And then there were some moments where he looked like he was going to go after Trump, and then he didn't. And then he backed off.
And Fiorina did great tonight. I've got to say, she did great. People loved her. She had some good laugh lines. She had some good applause lines. I mean, everything she says is bullshit, but... They don't
care.
She
did okay. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think she's going to necessarily go like skyrocketing, but I don't think she did herself any harm tonight.
No, I would agree with that.
Still like her.
I think she's going to maintain or maybe get a little more of a bump.
Yeah.
I would actually disagree with you too and say that she felt too superficial to the point where I don't think anyone could.
Even Republicans?
They're
not going to buy it?
No, I mean,
we'll
like.
See. Yeah, at least one of us get this totally wrong after each debate.
No, even Republicans can do math sometimes.
No, that's the other point.
Sometimes.
Well, look, like I said, I've completely given up on trying to get into the heads of the GOP electorate. So for all I know, Kasich will go skyrocketing in the polls tomorrow, and
Trump will be out. Yeah, I know. It's like who the fuck knows?
As much as I'd like to see McKasich stay around,
McKasich McAfee,
McKasich
super crossover ticket.
What's the difference?
Oh man, I would vote for that.
Close.
Who cares?
No, as much as I like to see him around just for the continued joke on the podcast, no, he's toast. And I think Fiorina, I think she did hurt herself.
We'll see.
I think she sounded polished, but just sounding polished. You have to have some content.
So the next debate is going to be another one of these two-hour bullshit, eliminate all the taxes and the whole government?
Yeah, they said the next debate's going to be about the economy because they can't talk about social issues.
They have to at some point.
Lose.
They have to. They have to have a debate about this at some
point. But the first one kind of was a little bit, and they're going to pivot. They pivoted 4 times this time. Gun control, abortion, immigration,
and
climate change.
In an economic debate, and gay marriage.
A lot of conservatives are not going to be happy about the fact that abortion was barely talked about. Guns
they don't
were
know anything
about,
about the economy, so yeah, this is boring for them. They want to hear the juicy stuff, and frankly, so do I.
Oh yeah. I want to see them go up in flames.
Forced motherhood, and yeah, I love that stuff. It makes my blood boil, but it makes them lose. So anyway,
I think they have to whittle the numbers down before they can really get into that because...
Well, I think the media will spin it as a good night for the GOP because I think they're a little bored of just kissing Hillary's ass after the last week, so...
And they did better tonight than they did last time.
Oh, frankly, they did, yeah, sure.
They really
as a
did.
Whole, they did.
Yeah.
Now, when is the next Democratic debate?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
Anyway, this was a good substantive after-debate talk. I thought because we were all drunk and tired that, well, I'm... Yeah, I had some vodka.
We're a little tipsy.
I made it all the way through.
You did.
Dana made it.
It's late. We stayed up late. A long story. Dana and Rachel had to go out for dinner, so we had to DVR this and watch it like 2 hours later. And so now it's like 1 a.m. local
for
time.
For you people. For you.
For
we
you.
Do this.
We do this. And we'll get it out tomorrow morning. And we got so much stuff coming up. We're going to have a podcast probably Friday. About everything that's gone down in the house and the budget deal.
There's so much.
We
going
got
on.
Our Supreme Court. We got our economics talk with Arliss Bunny at some point coming up.
Got some racial issues to discuss.
Did the Supreme Court docket come out?
We haven't even gotten to that yet.
Yeah, we've got a lot. So keep it up, people. We'll be here. We'll be more frequent than in this last week. It's been a little bit of a crazy week, but
yes.
We're going to try to be a little bit more frequent in the next coming weeks, and we have all that to look forward to. Either way.
If we're going to do it 1 a.m. every time, I might take 1 or 2 off.
The Reverend Testimony will be here for you.
Spread the word. Nice bite-size briefing of everything in politics by some snarky Gen X millennial types, so you don't have to watch the news as much as we do, because we know you hate doing that. Okay, so this is another episode of Reverend Testimony. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
McAfee.
Be cool, stay in school. Bye.